cover tonight, if we can, is the, we can go anywhere you want, doesn't matter, but I wanted to talk about Trump's second attack on Syria. We recently saw these cruise missiles shot at targets, you know, and the more I thought about this whole incident, the more I wondered, isn't it really dangerous to be destroying chemical weapons with bombs and missiles? I would think that chemical weapons, you'd have to blow them up underground or in some kind of controlled way, or you're asking for an environmental disaster. Is that correct, or is that not true?
Well, you're asking for some kind of a disaster. It would certainly be a hazardous waste disaster, and it's going to be, you know, depending on the kind of chemicals. But when you're talking about the cash that was found with Jaish al-Islam there in Douma, that was some 30 tons of chlorine. That would have been, you know, a horrific disaster if that had gone off.
Okay, so there was 30 tons of chlorine found. And tell us, have you done any research on chlorine gas? How dangerous is that? Chlorine's fairly common, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fairly common. But, I mean, you know, to have it in a nerve gas form is a bit uncommon. And, you know, obviously, if you smell the Clorox bottle, you get an idea of how toxic that can be.
Right.
But when you're talking about chlorine gas, I mean, it suffocates the person. It's different than sarin gas, where one drop of sarin gas will kill you. One drop.
Right.
The chlorine has to be more of a kind of a fog, if you will, that's inhaled, and it suffocates you quickly. The lungs just cannot take in any oxygen. And so the chlorine is, you know, it's just remarkable, in my opinion, Mark, and a tragedy in many ways, that the gas that they showed that was found by the investigators was made by Merck Corporation in Germany, right? Who's making toxic gas and, you know, chemical weapons in canisters coming from Germany. I mean, you know, you'd think maybe they would want to bypass that kind of thing after what happened in World War II.
Well, let me ask you then, are you saying that Bashar al-Assad is really responsible for these chemical weapons attacks?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, good, good. Because it wouldn't make sense, because he's winning the war anyway, right?
Well, he's winning the war, I mean, kind of. I mean, the country is in such a condition of civil war. I mean, you know, if your whole country is being destroyed, how do you call that a win? You know, but you've had, there are so many parties that are taking Syria apart. You know, you have the Kurds up in the northeastern section of the country. You have the Turks, who are at war with the Kurds and who are also coming down in the northwestern section of the country. You have, of course, the Russians, who have a stake in a couple of bases there that they want to keep active and alive. You have the Iranians, which are there to support the regime of Bashar al-Assad and who have set up several bases. And then, of course, you have all of the mercenaries and the foreign deployment from NATO, who are really invading and occupying the country in violation of international law, frankly. But and that includes French troops, Canadian troops, British troops, U.S. troops, German troops, Finnish troops, Norwegian troops, and, of course, the Israelis. And the Israelis are engaged in really, you know, what I would call, you know, a demonic, absolutely demonic approach to Syria.
Wow. And, why is Israel so demonic when it comes to Syria?
Well, it's not all Israel. It's just Israel's leadership.
Okay.
And you know, frankly, I don't understand it. But, you know, but from a biblical point of view, you know, the area in Syria that is to the east of the Golan Heights is an area that biblically is known as Bashan, right? And this is where Og of Bashan used to occupy at the time that the whole of the house came over the Jordan. Now, if you go back to that old tribal land grant, it was what they call the half tribe of Manasseh was given the land of Og of Bashan, and they had to conquer Og, who was a giant whose, you know, bed was reportedly 18 cubits, or, you know, probably something like 40 feet long, his bed. Yeah, he was a big guy. And the house of Manasseh did in fact conquer Og of Bashan, and they took that land. Well, you know, the thing is that I don't know what's going on in the mindset, really, of the leadership in Israel. A lot of people say they're going after what's called the Greater Israel Project, which would allow Israel to claim all the lands from the Nile River to the Euphrates River. Although I think that is an incorrect reading of Scripture, frankly, that the southwestern point would be touching the Nile. The northeastern point would be touching the Euphrates. But it doesn't mean all the land that includes all of Syria and Iraq and portions of Saudi Arabia and all of Jordan and so forth. That's a ludicrous understanding of the Scripture, a generous understanding. And the Greater Israel Project has no basis in biblical law or in international law. So to the extent that Israel is pushing for that, they are at war with the international community. And it would be an illegal enterprise. Now, there's another dynamic going on there, Mark, that I think is important to know. That is that you have, first of all, you have a natural gas field off the coast of Cyprus in Israeli-claimed territory that's called the Leviathan Field.
Hmm.
And this is a huge deposit of natural gas, a significant run all of Israel for the next 300 years, while they're exporting it into Europe. Of course, being able to export that natural gas into Europe would be a huge boon for the Israeli economy. To do that would require either shipping it in tankers, which is possible, but it's more expensive than shipping it in the tankers, say, to the port maybe at Haifa or Akko, and transporting it into a pipeline to be shipped into existing infrastructure in Turkey where other natural gas pipelines are flowing. In addition, there is reportedly a very large oil find in what's called the Golan Heights. And for your listeners that don't know the nation of Israel well, the northeastern border of Israel is still under, basically it's a UN protectorate, and it is its legality is questioned. The Israelis will not return to Syria because the Golan presents a significant military disadvantage. In other words, the Syrians could put tanks on the Golan and lob shells into the city of Tiberias on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. And so you see that... And what also gives them the high ground in terms of being able to take down Kiryat Arba or the city of Safed. And all of those communities would be under direct military threat. So the Israelis find that to be unacceptable. So they took the Golan Heights up to the edge of Mount Hermon there. That gives them the high ground and an opportunity to see into the vast plains of Syria and northern Jordan, that land of Bashan we were talking about. In that area, there is reputed to be a huge oil find. And again, if there is oil found there, the way you ship that oil into the market that's going to buy it, which is Europe, is you have to ship it up through Syria and through Turkey. Now, Turkey doesn't have a problem with shipping Israeli oil, but Syria does. Now, in addition, you have the Saudis and the Qataris and the Omanis and some of the other Gulf states who do not want to declare to the world how what kind of marginal decline is going on with their oil fields. They're significant. The Saudis have been proposing this IPO of this company called Aramco for some time, and they haven't gone public with it, partly because they don't want to disclose in an audit to what degree their wells are in marginal decline. They are not the largest oil producer in the world anymore, by a long shot. So what's next? Well, what's next is that when the oil is gone, there's plenty of natural gas to go around. And so you have natural gas from Qatar, UAE, and from the Saudis that they want to pump into Europe. Well, who's the top gas supplier in Europe right now? It's Russia. And Russia is supplying its gas, has been supplying its gas through the nation of Ukraine. I think they had six or seven major pipelines that bottleneck near Kiev. And then they come into Western Europe through two pipelines that come out of Ukraine. And so NATO illegally seized Ukraine. I mean, this was an overthrow of a pre-existing democratically elected government. Now, you may say, well, he was elected through corruption and so on and so forth. And that's probably true. There was corruption in the election. But then again, there's corruption in the elections in France and in Britain and in Germany and in the United States.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's very difficult for the pot to call the kettle black at this point. That didn't stop us from engaging in a totally illegal violation of international law to sponsor mercenaries using counterfeit dollar bills to overthrow the lawfully elected government of the Ukraine and to install really a Nazi puppet regime. And that regime, of course, when it took power, within the second day of taking power, issued flyers demanding that all the Jews in the country register. Now, let's take a moment on that, Mark, if we can. Because when you talk about the Holocaust, okay, when you talk about the Holocaust, which is, of course, the moniker given to the destruction of Eastern European Jewry during World War II, mm-hmm. together with, you know, another 17 million people who were killed by the Third Reich. Most of that Jewry that was killed, they were killed in three nations, really. It was in Poland, Belarus, and Ukraine. The numbers in Germany, I think, were under 100,000 people. But you had these significant numbers in Poland, Ukraine, and Belarus. And the people in, particularly in Western Ukraine, are very vengeful and vindictive concerning Eastern European Jewry. And they were very, very sadistic in how they killed these people. You recall that Auschwitz was a camp in Poland, not in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. Camp in Poland. And there were others like Sobibor that were also in Poland. And, you know, the very famous movie Defiance took place in Belarus, right? And so you had reigns of terror that were going on in Belarus and Ukraine under the communists that were reversed. And when it was reversed, those people took vengeance with a vengeance. And so many, many people were killed. So when this Nazi regime rose in Ukraine, the current regime that's there, you can imagine that the Russian Jews and the Ukrainian Jews, most of whom lived in the Crimea and in the Donbass region, became extremely fearful that another significant genocide where people in the hundreds of thousands would have been murdered. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the rhetoric from the Ukrainian regime was nuke them. They were talking about using nuclear weapons in the Donbass region. And so you had, you know, you've got some very deleterious things going on here. But when you look at what happened in Ukraine, once Ukraine was seized, all of the pipelines were under NATO control. And so the Russians have begun to push to build a couple of new pipelines, one through Turkey, and then one that will come through the north. And the one that will come through the north is already under construction and will again supply 40 to 60% of Europe's natural gas needs, Western Europe's natural gas needs. The Saudis want that market. The Israelis want that market. The Qataris want that market. And the U.S. wants that market. So this is really the nature of the competition in Syria. And
So you're saying Syria is related to what's going on in with the Crimea area or whatever?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one and the same war.
Really?
And oh, yeah, sure. Because what's happening here is you have a competition again. The West does not want, remember that the Saudis own the large bulk of the U.S. debt. Most people think it's China, but China holds about $2 trillion in U.S. debt. The Saudis, the number is in excess of $11 trillion. It's off the books because that's the way the Saudis wanted it, was off the books.
So are you saying we owe the Saudis that much money?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And they bought a lot of that debt. And of course, you know, they buy the debt in terms of treasury bills and so forth. Mm-hmm. There's means of buying the debt. But yeah, the Saudis own this country.
Yeah, that seems very real to me. I have another guest who's like an expert on population and immigration. And he's saying that there are 100,000 people coming in the country per month. And there's no way our economy can deal with that.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the immigration issue is a huge... I mean, there is a plan, Mark, that has been announced through, if you will, the New World Order, mm-hmm. Or however you want to put it, you know, the elite leaders of the world, who have looked at the declining demographics in the West, and we have a declining demographic that is huge. You know, when you look at Eastern Europe, you have a population, a repopulation demographic between 0.8 and 1. You need a 2.3 to survive. When you hit 1.9, you're in irreversible decline, and you've got Russia at 0.8 and Eastern Europe at 1.0. But most of Western Europe used to be hovering between 1.6 and 1.8, but it's down between 1.1 and 1.2 in its reproduction rate. The United States hit marginal decline quite a few years ago, I think in the early 90s, where our birth rate was running at about 1.8. So, but somehow we went from 220 million people to over 300 million people. And it's because, of course, the power elite say, we have to repopulate. We have to repopulate in order to keep the economic engines going. So, yes, I mean, on one hand, you have immigration coming in. You say, well, this taxes the system. But it taxes the system only if they're on welfare, only if they're getting food stamps, only if they're getting medical benefits for which they're not paying, and so on and so forth. But if you're talking about people coming in who are employed, then you have people who fill up schools that otherwise would be torn down. You have teachers that are teaching people that otherwise would be unemployed, right?
Well, you know what's interesting that's happening in the world? You're exactly right. I mean, the country, in terms of the white Anglo-Saxon people, most of the Western people are under that 2.0 range you're talking about. But if you look at countries like Bangladesh, which is the size of Iowa, it has a population of 167 million people.
So the in a small little place like that.
Yeah, that's more people than Russia, I think.
It is. Yeah, Russia has about 140 million.
So the Islamic leaders don't allow birth control, do they?
No, in fact, well, it's not a question of birth control. Abortion is absolutely, unlawful in Islamic nations. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they practice polygamy, although polygamy is not necessarily the rule of the day. I mean, polygamy is possible under Islamic law, but it's not necessarily the rule of the day. However, in Eurabia, in Western Europe, where they've had intense migration, they do practice polygamy. Because polygamy is a very quick way to expand the body of people. I mean, this is what happened with the Mormon Church when the Mormons first populated Utah. They went to polygamy in order to increase their ranks in a very short period of time. And so it would not be uncommon for one man to father 25 or 30 children.
But they don't do polygamy anymore there, do they, in Utah?
No, polygamy is not part of the Mormon Church anymore.
I did not think that was the case. Yeah. So we have this whole weird thing with immigration, and which I think is a disaster. What are your thoughts? I think the immigration, the way it's going, is a disaster.
Well, the problem is with immigration is that you have, first of all, it's totally unsupervised. Secondly, it's completely corrupted. Yeah. And this is the thing that disgusts, I think, most Americans. I think most Americans would understand immigration if we had, first of all, closed borders.
Yes.
You know, close the borders and then deal with the problems that you have. But the first thing you have to do is, you know, if you have a leak in your kitchen, you have to stop the water from flowing before you can do anything else.
Right.
And it's the same thing here. When it comes to immigration, you have to close the borders and control the borders. So you say every person that comes over this border is someone we know about. And it's someone who is managed for whatever the law may be. Now, when we get to talking about amnesty or other issues on immigration, let's talk about that after we get the borders secured. But to have an unsecured border, and you know, look, all Americans know that the borders are unsecured because Republicans like the benefit to the economy of having labor that they can bring in that can be paid beneath the minimum wage without anybody talking about it. And Democrats like the borders being unsecured because they secure a voting bloc that allows them to unseat the Republican that wouldn't close the border. And so both parties have they have a dog in the hunt. Both parties have a dog in the hunt. That's why they're both unwilling to secure the border. But what about Americans? What about the people who live here? Don't we have a right to have our vote protected? You know, my big shtick with immigration, Mark, has to do with the vote, okay?
We we don't have any rights anymore, right? Any rights. Go ahead.
Yeah, we got some privileges. That's about it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's on a give or take basis. Well, you know, when you talk about voting, you know, it's supposed to be one man, one vote. But if, in the state where I live, we allow for registration. If you have a driver's license, then you can vote. And you can get a driver's license with any Social Security number, whether or not it's valid or whether or not it's a bulk Social Security number given to people who otherwise don't have documentation to allow them to work in the country. So my vote is being divvied up 4, 5, 6, 10 times by people who do not have a lawful right to vote in the country, but which are given a green light by the powers that be in the state. And that's the case in Washington, Oregon, and California. And in California, it is completely inordinate.
Yeah.
The American citizens voting in a federal election in California are simply outvoted by foreign nationals who are allowed to cast ballots in a federal election.
Jeez. Okay, let's back up a little bit because I'm going to ask you some questions to get your some take on some things. So what if the globalists are behind Hillary and Trump? So what if Hillary was the fast track to globalism? And if Hillary would have gotten in, we'd have a nuclear war with Russia already, and we'd have regime change with all those countries that General Wesley Clark talked about. But what if Trump is the slow train to globalism? I mean, here he is firing missiles again at Syria. So do you still have faith in Trump? Or do you think he's also being, maybe they have a gun to his head, I don't know, but he hasn't drained the swamp. He hasn't stopped the crazy immigration. He hasn't closed down all the military bases and stopped all the foreign wars. So what's your take on stuff?
Well, I mean, it's a fact that Trump has expanded every single war that Obama started.
Yeah.
It's depressing. That's a fact.
It's depressing.
And, you know, and then I hear all this stuff. I mean, all these commentators are out there that are talking about Q. Oh, Q said this, and QAnon said this, and Q said that, and Q said the other thing. Let's interpret his cryptic riddles, right? Well, you know, Q is a psyop. That's my humble opinion, Mark.
Okay?
Q is a psyop, and he's there to put out these cryptic riddles, or he or she or they are there to put out these cryptic riddles in order to keep the conservatives going, we're going to drain the swamp. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to get indicted. You know, look. The facts, you know, Judge Napolitano said it 4 years ago. The facts where Hillary Clinton are concerned are so open and shut, it would take a jury 5 minutes to convict her.
Right.
I mean, they're just open and shut. Is this your server? Yes. Did you put these documents on that server? Yes, I did. Did you have permission? No, you didn't. Okay, here's the felony statute right here. That's espionage, and you've got 6,250 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
End of story.
Yeah.
How difficult is it? Well, no. Hillary, as you know, is above the law, as is Debbie Wasserman Schultz, as is Hugh Abedin, as is everybody else. They're all above the law. And, you know, when everybody's above the law, what this is what the powers that be do not understand. They can convince this little group of sycophants that they have in New York that call themselves the media. Right. They all drink from the same Kool-Aid bowl and they're all convinced, everything that's on the other side of the Hudson River is out there. Right. Fly over country. You know, I don't know if you ever saw that cartoon. It's like, here's Manhattan. There's New Jersey. That's over there. Everything else is over there. Right.
OK.
Completely provincial New York mindset. You have the same thing in L.A. Everything outside of L.A. is just wasteland as far as the people who live there are concerned. Well, the New Yorkers are under the impression that if they convince themselves, the rest of the world is convinced. The rest of the world knows a story that those people in the mainstream media do not know, which is that they are perceived as liars, thieves, thugs, and murderers, and perverts all over the world. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when they come out and they're telling America, we're this, we're that, we're the other thing, well, you know what? We have, you know, like, I'll give you an example, Pedogate, right? Who's been prosecuted on Pedogate?
Nobody.
Nobody. Who's been prosecuted on the murder of Seth Rich? Nobody.
Nobody.
And instead, we get another set of false flags, like the shooting at Parkland.
Yeah. So, the Parkland shooting, as far as I'm concerned, that looks like another false flag to me. Do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, come on. How many high schools do you know of have the Secret Service show up 2 weeks before and say, we're here?
Right.
Okay, what are you guys doing here? Well, we're going to stage a live ammunition drill. Now, look, if I'm the principal and I hear live ammunition drill, right?
What?
You know, a live ammunition drill? Sorry, I'm out of here. Right. I'm out of here and all my students are out of here. We're not going to be here. We're going to be gone. We'll be down in Key West having spring break for the fall and semester, right?
Wow.
But, you know, you have all these things that take place and they're all designed to do the same kind of thing. And it's the same psyop, the same rhetoric over and over again. Now, the situation in Syria was a grievous disappointment for me.
Yeah.
And that's, I gave my ticket back to the conductor and respectfully got off the Trump train.
I did too.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know what happened in Syria. I know it clear as a bell. Everybody knows it clear as a bell. These white helmets, they are paid by American tax dollars to lie about a false flag. I mean, that's what they're paid to do. So what do you expect them to do? You think they're going to do something? Yeah, they're going to lie about a false flag because they're paid to do that. They're the only source in the world that said, oh, yeah, Syria, the government, used chlorine gas to kill all these children. The children have now come forward and testified. We were paid $10 in candy bars to let them hose us down with water for the cameras.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that. Because one of the doctors, quote-unquote doctors, he kind of looks at the camera and he winks, and then he falls over. And then the little kid beside him kind of opens his eyes and smiles and then closes his eyes. Is that the one you're talking about?
Right. I mean, totally set up. And in the meantime, and why are they doing this? They're doing this because Theresa May, who, in my opinion, got elected perpetrating a fraud on the people of the UK, she was supposed to be the Brexit leader, and she has now since changed her mind, and she intends on leading the UK to maintain the UK in the EU. They're never going to get free of the EU. And so as a consequence, she is completely misleading that country. And she set up this ridiculous Skripal poisoning, which they've now launched it and put it square in the hands of the MI6 being responsible for that poisoning. And she needed to cover it. And so they covered it by initiating this so-called fake gas attack that was totally orchestrated and funded by MI6 in Syria, using the white hats, which are funded by the United States, to fake this gassing. And then once they have this lie, then they come out and say, well, if we say it's true, therefore it's true. You know who believes that are pathological liars, okay? People who lie all the time, they can't tell the difference between the lie and the truth. And so they figure if they just keep saying it, the lie is going to be believed. But I hate to break the news to people. We live in an information age, an international information age, that is capable of conveying all kinds of sources in a very short period of time. And so it didn't take long at all before investigators were in the field in Douma saying, no traces of gas, nobody in the hospital, no dead bodies, no nothing.
So was there really tons of chlorine found?
Yes, there was. What happened is, what's going on is this. First of all, you have these operators who in this Jaish al-Islam, you know, al-Nusra, ISIS, ISIL, al-Qaeda, etc., that are in Syria, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys are wearing tzitzit. Now, do you know what tzitzit are?
No.
Okay, in the Jewish world, there is a Torah command that a person is supposed to wear a fringes, if you will, on the four corners of your garment, fringes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be laced with a blue ribbon that reminds you of the Torah, okay? So it's a Torah command to wear these fringes on the four corners of your garment. Now, a lot of people in the Messianic world, incorrectly, in my opinion, wear them on the four belt loops of their pants. But you'll see people wearing tzitzit. Well, these guys are wearing tzitzit that are fighting for Jaish al-Islam. Long and short of this, there's no command in the Quran to wear tzitzit, okay?
They're Israelis?
They're Israelis.
Okay.
And they're perpetrating these heinous acts of barbarity in order to paint Islam as a heinous, barbaric theology. And so this is what's going on. And in the meantime, the Israelis have no problem and completely disrespecting international law and bombing the daylights out of Syria whenever they feel like it. And, you know, we're the proud Israelis. We've got the best fighting force in the world. They say as they stack their F-15s up over the coast of Lebanon and fire their missiles over Lebanese territory into Syria to make their strikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, in my view, it's violations of international law at a very, very high level. And there's no accountability. Just like no, everybody's above the law in this country that's in the political class, so Israel and the United States are above the law when it comes to international law, the law of nations. The laws against crimes against humanity, the 1947 Nuremberg Code, the U.S. and Israel are above those laws.
Well, let me ask you something. Do you think that, for example, Alex Jones, is he just a little confused? Is he just trying to sort this out? Or is he a person that's just there so we kind of spin our wheels and don't get anything done?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's the case with Alex. I think Alex is doing the best to say what he can. I mean, he's a newscaster, self-made guy, right? Yeah, he's a self-made guy out of Texas who built his InfoWars empire doing what he does. And, you know, so more power to him. Do I think that he's a PSYOP operator? No. Do I think Q is a PSYOP? Yeah, Q is a PSYOP.
What about Dr. Steve Pachinik?
Pachinik has got some interesting things to say from time to time, as does Stone and some of the other sources that they have. But, I mean, you got to take a lot of these guys with a grain of salt, because the problem is when you see the information that's coming down, you have to check other sources outside of the country or you won't get any aspect of the truth. There are people on the ground who will testify. You know, there was a gal from Canada who was an eyewitness in Syria. She had a lot to say. There was a professor from Canada that went in with the Human Rights Watch. He had a lot to say. There's Tulsi Gabbard, the Democrat out of Hawaii. She had a lot to say. Dick Black has got a lot to say. These people have got a lot of information to put on the table concerning what's really happening. And, of course, in the United States, we have a military-industrial complex that is completely out of control. They do not care how many people they have to kill, how many countries they have to destroy, whether or not they displace the entire demography of the Middle East and land it in Europe and then force all those families in Europe to carry that displacement. They could care less. As long as the F-35 gets funded, right? As long as the next generation of research on SpaceX gets funded, as long as whatever program it is that they're building gets funded, they don't care. And they don't even care anymore whether or not the military hardware they're building is actually good.
Yeah,
they
good
could care less.
Good point. Very good. Because that F-35 has so many holes in it. We could do a whole show on the F-35.
Yeah, the F-35 is a piece of junk. And, you know, you compare even the F-22 Raptor, and I got to tell you, I saw the Raptor perform. The F-22 is an impressive plane, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, would I like to fly one? Sure, I would. I mean, it's an impressive aircraft. But when you see side-by-side with the Sukhoi Su-35, the Su-35 does performance things that the F-22 cannot do.
Right, right.
Because the 35 has got double vector technology. It can do a 360 at full speed, you know, at any altitude, right?
Yeah.
It goes into a cloud. You have no idea where it's coming out.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
You know, they're beautiful aircraft. But the F-35, you know, this is like, let's put together, Popiel's pocket fisherman here.
I mean, that's a great analogy. It's going to do everything, right?
Yeah, it does everything. We've got vertical landing and takeoff. You know, it cleans the dishes while you're flying.
Yeah,
you know, it's a stealth fighter, but it flies a lot slower than everything else, and its engines aren't very tactical, and it doesn't have very good maneuverability, but it does have vertical takeoff and landing.
Yeah, it's like trying to have a dump truck that's also a race car. It doesn't make any sense. It's just totally ridiculous. So what do you think of a guy like this guy, Mad Dog Mattis?
Well, Mad Dog has protected himself, okay? Mad Dog has protected himself. He came out and said, we don't have any proof that gas was used in Syria. He said that before Trump bombed and after Trump bombed.
No kidding.
Yeah, so Mattis has, unlike Colin Powell, who lied on behalf of the Bush administration and who has since had his reputation splattered all over the curb, Mattis came out and told the truth privately, quietly. Well, he did it publicly, but he did it, you know, he just said it, matter of fact, we don't have any proof, that's that. But that didn't stop Trump from taking the bellicose rhetoric of saying, this is, you know, Assad's an animal, you know, and therefore we're going to bomb, you know. And I'll tell you something, I'll tell you, Mark, the bombing of Syria is a pretext and only a pretext for the real bombing that's going to begin in Iran. And wow. I'm telling you, that one is heating up now. And that's always been the target. You know, Netanyahu wants a war with Iran.
And that's one of the countries on General Wesley Clark's list, right? Iran?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the ones they want for a regime change.
Right, yeah. But it's not like the old days. You know, it used to be that Iran was, you know, kind of a backward country. We put in the Shah, and all of a sudden it kind of became westernized. It's not like that. It's not the days following World War II. You have these countries that have a great deal more sophistication. And I can tell you, I mean, Russia and China are 100% behind Iran. Even more so than they were behind Syria. I mean, they are 100% behind Iran. And John Bolton is like, we need to bomb them. We need to bomb them. You know, Saudi Arabia wants to bomb them. And Saudi Arabia, you know, Saudi Arabia, if ever there was a war criminal nation, it's Saudi Arabia. Right.
Oh yeah, they're bombing Yemen now, aren't they?
Oh, it's genocide in Yemen.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And they're doing it with American hardware. I mean, if you go on Google or YouTube and you take a look, you put nukes in Yemen, you will see videos of two nuclear bombs going off in Yemen.
Are they tactical nukes?
Yeah, they're in the 12 to 20 kiloton. I think they're both 12 kiloton nukes, which is slightly smaller than the bomb that went off in Hiroshima, right? And I don't know if they were used against bunkered ammo or what, but you can sure see the videos, and you can see those nukes going off, and you can see the protons coming off the mushroom cloud. So, yeah, I mean, to say that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the only cities to have been bombed, or Hiroshima and Nagasaki the only cities to be bombed, well, it's not true, not anymore. Nukes have been used in many places. And Yemen is one of them. And where the Saudis are concerned, look, the 9/11 story that was given to us was that 13 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi intelligence.
Yeah.
The backroom story is that the Saudis were the ones that funded the, you know, inside job. Either way, you have Saudis are controlling the publishing of textbooks in the United States. That's why all of these schools are teaching the five pillars of Islam and telling children to pick up an Arabic name and give the Shahadadan, you know, the confession of faith in Islam, and pray on a prayer blanket, when every other form of Christianity is, you know, you got the ACLU down there beheading people if you even mention a Bible. But the Quran walks right in the door, and they're teaching it right in the classroom. And it's been going on all over the country. They're the ones that put 1,200 mosques in the United States. And they are the ones that have been sponsoring some of the worst form of terrorism in the world, including putting the money behind ISIS. That's a Saudi-funded operation.
Let's step back a little bit. I want to step back in time, and I like to ask some of my guests about the early United States. And I don't know if you've done any research in this area or not, but... for example, Benjamin Franklin, he's regarded as this great man who was one of the founders of our country. But if you look into him a little deeper, he was a member of the Hellfire Club. He was involved in satanic rituals, and they found bodies in his property that was in England. And he really wasn't such a nice fellow. Have you done any research on Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah, I have seen that research, Mark. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I got to tell you, if you go back and you look at England, and I can tell you, I'm kind of seeing the same thing happening in America today, okay? Which is that, you know, King James, around the time he was publishing the King James Bible, he also published a book on demonology, right? And before King James, you had Elizabeth I, and Elizabeth I had an advisor named John Dee, who was into invoking demons. And he was the one that actually taught the practice of sacrificing children, drinking the blood, making invocation, summoning demons, and all of these kinds of things in order to achieve worldly power. Okay, now this belief has been wide held, I mean, since Babylonian times. It's a Babylonian pagan practice. And England, during this period of time, when you're talking going from, you know, and remember that 1776, it was Wieshaupt that formed the Illuminati, right? Which was the satanic arm of the Jesuits. And the Jesuits and the Masons, you know, pretty much merged about that time. And so you had these secret societies that were blooming everywhere. I mean, from the early 1500s on, you had secret societies blooming everywhere. And there were a ton of secret societies in London, one club after another. And some of their practices were worse than others. Some of them did engage in human sacrifice. Some of them engaged in child sacrifice. Many of them engaged in the drinking of blood. But they were all secret societies that had occult trappings and satanic worship there. Now, when you talk about the real history of America, the real history of America had people that were part of this really explosion that took place with the Protestant Reformation around the time of the publication of the 1560 Geneva. Now, there were precursors in Scotland and in the Netherlands and in Switzerland and in the Czech Republic and even in France. There were precursors to the to this emergence of John Calvin. But when Calvin comes around and you get to the 1560 Geneva, you had that was kind of the peak of the wave, if you will, the white cap of the wave happened with that publishing. And there was a real movement that took place inside the Puritans and in other reformed, you know, the Huguenots and some of the other, the Hussians. There were a lot of reforms that were happening, and those reforms pushed into America. This is why William Penn in Pennsylvania was a Quaker state, and you know the Massachusetts Bay Colony was a Puritan state. And those people were trying to follow, at least to some degree, some level of scriptural righteousness, to some degree, right? That wasn't the case everywhere. I mean, Georgia was a prison colony, and you know, Jamestown was really a political colony. But by the time you get to 1776, you had opportunists who would create a nation that was designed to be the warrior nation on behalf of the tripartite relationship between Rome, London, and Washington, D.C. That's why Washington, D.C. was built on a Masonic symbol, and the White House is at the base of a pentagram, you know, an open-ended pentagram, so the wickedness can flow to the west of Washington, D.C. And it has Roman trappings. You have the you have the Capitol building with its cupola. And you have, of course, the Egyptian obelisk in the middle of the mall.
Right.
And so all of these things are, sometimes you have to look and see the forest so you can spot the trees. And what you can clearly see in Washington, D.C. is Masonic symbol with satanic trappings in built in homage to Rome. I mean, it's obvious. You can't miss it.
So like the Washington Monument is an obelisk, like the ones in Egypt. And that's supposed to channel, I guess, all this phallic male energy or something like that?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, and to this day, I mean, you know, look, it's George Washington's phallus, and nothing in D.C. can get above it by zoning code, right? By code.
That's funny, man. So what are your thoughts on... So are you saying that our country was designed from the beginning, from the get-go, with this Luciferian satanic influence?
Yeah, there was certainly a satanic influence in the forming of the country, certainly.
So there were two forces going back and forth at the very beginning.
That's right. That's right. And of course, think about what they all said. This constitution will not work if you don't have a righteous country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they were doing was they were exploiting the righteousness of the people that lived here. They were exploiting that to build a government that was a secular government on top of a righteous people.
I see. They were using their power and their strength and their energy.
That's exactly right. And it was only going to be a matter of time before, like every other socialist project or parasitical project, that all of that energy would be tapped. And you know, then they began looting. I mean, first of all, you had the loss of federalism with the Civil War. I mean, that was really the end of the Constitutional Republic, was the Civil War.
Why is that?
Never been. Well, because once the Civil War happened, the South pulled out. When the South pulled out, there was no quorum. So everything that Abraham Lincoln did was not pursuant to an American government. It was an emergency war government that operated under the Lieber Code, or General Rule 100, which is still in effect today, and it's martial law. Now, if you look at the Lieber Code tells you in paragraph 1 that if you have U.S. troops, if you have federal troops in your state, you're under martial law. Okay, now ask yourself where you live, is there a U.S. military base in that state? If there is, then you're under martial law.
Wow. Of course, yeah, I never thought of it that way.
But you have this kind of trick, if you will. You have this trick that indicates that, play like the Constitution is in power until such a time that it's not in your interest, then ignore the Constitution and do whatever you need to do, if it means military law or Patriot Act or whatever you need to do, suspend habeas corpus. You can do whatever you want. And so we've been operating under emergency powers. Of course, 1913 was the pivotal year when the Federal Reserve was created, the income tax was created, and the looting of American wealth began. So after it took the spiritual wealth of the country, then it took the intellectual wealth, then it began taking the physical wealth in 1913 and 1921. Now we've been completely looted. I mean, if you recall, William McKinley minted a 1 ounce gold coin in 1901 that was worth $20. That's worth $1,350 right now. Okay, so that tells you how much the currency has been looted. It's been looted to the tune of 97% to 98% of its value. And Americans don't even know it, because we're just sitting here in the pot cooking like a nice, comfortable frog. And so now we're on the verge of a complete looting of the country. And what is being prepared right now, Mark, is a total looting of America. In the same way that the Soviet Union was looted after its collapse, America is going to be looted after this next confrontation.
So you think we'll go to war against Syria and then we'll have an economic collapse?
And it's not going to be against Syria. It's going to be against Iran.
Against Iran, excuse me. Yeah, that's what I meant. So do you see World War III coming before the collapse or after the collapse?
Well, I think they're trying to get World War III started in front of the collapse so that they can avoid the collapse.
Oh,
in other words, if you're competing with Russia to sell natural gas to Europe, well, if you blow up Russia, then you're not competing with their natural gas anymore. If you're competing with Japan in the manufacturing of automobiles, if you blow up Nagasaki, you don't have to worry about Mitsubishi's being imported into America. Similarly, if you're competing with Germany in terms of who's going to sell cars in Europe, well, destroy Mercedes-Benz and Porsche and Audi, and then you don't have that problem, for at least for a while. And so if you can destroy the other side's infrastructure, your competitor's infrastructure, well, you can dominate the market for a while.
Do you think Trump has been a globalist from the beginning, or do you think they have a gun against his head, or is it something else?
No, I don't think he's a globalist. I really don't.
Okay.
But I think he is, first of all, I think he has this kind of apprehension about a need to be macho. And so he said something. He says, I've been really tough on Russia. Well, you haven't been really tough on Russia. You exposed the Western world to within seconds of a nuclear holocaust.
Exactly.
And that is not being tough on Russia. That's just being absolutely reckless. And you're fortunate that the Russians have such a slow, slow fuse. And, you know, but that isn't going to stop him, because he will be emboldened. He's going to go back after Iran, because John Bolton is telling him, oh, just smash him. You know, go in there and smash him. That'll be the end of it. And it won't be.
Well,
it won't be. I mean, it'll be the beginning, not the end.
And this sounds really bad for me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It almost sounds like Trump isn't so bright in some ways.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, people, you know, intelligence is an interesting thing, right? You're only as good as the information you have.
Right.
And he doesn't have dissenting opinion in the White House. He doesn't have different advisors. And the reason why is because, look, let's just take it for what it is, Mark. We have a totally corrupted society. We have a society that wants to believe a lie rather than the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We have a society that can't deal with the truth. That's why all the snowflakes are hiding.
Yeah.
Because the truth is just too brutal. And I mean, I can criticize the snowflakes, but if I was 21 years old and I was looking out on my country that owes the world $200 trillion with no chance of ever paying it back, with demographics coming from Deagle saying there's only going to be 25 million people here in 7 years, you know, with us being on the verge of nuclear holocaust, maybe I'd be a snowflake too. I'd run for cover somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just we've hit a point where the culture out of New York is and the culture out of D.C. It's we're not a constitutional republic. We don't have the rule of law. We live in crass feudalism and corruption. Bribe taking is the norm. It is not the exception. Bribing and taking bribes is how the country runs, and it doesn't run on anything else. There's no integrity. There is no class, there's no stature, there's no law, and there's no standards. There's no morality. And so what Trump is doing is he's reacting here and he's reacting there. But to go to war and launch cruise missiles into a country that has suffered, like Syria has suffered, and Syria did nothing. They're just there. And all of a sudden we decide, you know, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we have to have an Arab Spring and we have to displace this guy. Because the king in Saudi Arabia wants to sell his natural gas in Europe, and he doesn't want to put the pipeline through Iraq. He wants to put it through Syria. Go kill him. I own your country. Go kill him.
So you're saying that Trump really believes he was stopping the gassing of children by launching these missiles?
I think that he didn't ask himself the question, is it true or not? His advisors told him this is the case, and he said, whether it's true or not, I'm going to believe it, and I'm going to act accordingly.
That's kind of strange.
Well, again, well, you're going to risk the whole planet on a lie. And I've said this before, Mark. We've put this country at jeopardy. We put the whole world at jeopardy over a lie. And all of it is really, it's all of this is prophesied. It's all biblical. It's all laid out there. It just gives the whole story entirely that we would believe liars. And here we are, and there's a hook in the jaw. Trump doesn't know it, but he has a hook in the jaw that is leading him into this war in the Middle East. And ultimately, we're gonna be destroyed because of it. I mean, I can guarantee you, the Russians who lost 16 million men in battle in World War II, fighting our war, right? Our war. In other words, our strategy was, okay, let's put the Russians against Germany until we've hit them with enough attrition that all their fighting troops are gone. Then we'll invade Europe and take them down, which is exactly what we did.
Right.
And so the Russians have sworn 1,000 oaths that in this next war, the war will come to American soil.
Oh, I hadn't heard that before. That's quite interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Can you elaborate on that at all?
Well, sure. I mean, the Russians have sat back and said, look, America has sat here and done all this stuff because they have an ocean on one side and an ocean on the other. Mm-hmm. And they have developed their systems in order to strike America. And they have systems that are particularly designed to completely destroy the United States. Now, you got to understand, these Russians really love the United States. There are many Russian immigrants here. There are many people in Russia that would like to be here. They love the United States. The last thing they want to do on Earth is destroy the United States. But if they get pushed into a war, they're going to make sure that the United States suffers. Mm. They're going to make sure of it. They had 16 million dead. They want to make sure that we feel the tragedy of war.
Yep. Okay, yeah. It's overwhelming. There's just so much going on. It's strange to watch it all play out.
And you know, when you talk about the economy, you know, the economy, you see the Drudge report saying, oh, all these numbers are just glistening high and you're looking so good. And then you talk to the backroom guys who are working on Wall Street. You know, they know the bond market is about to totally collapse. We've got, you know, on one hand, you have one guy telling you housing prices are higher than ever. Yeah, that's because inflation is higher than ever. I mean, we're rocking at a 9% inflation rate per month right now. The dollar is being devalued against all international currencies. And the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians have declared all-out war on the petrodollar. All-out war. And there's countries, one country right and left, joining the war. Like Venezuela has joined the war. Brazil has joined that war. The countries are going to cryptocurrencies. Anything to get away from the petrodollar is taking place right now. And what's going to happen is you're going to see at least $2 trillion in hard cash wash back ashore. And when that $2 trillion washes back ashore, That is reflected in higher prices. Look what you're paying for a gallon of gas right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Price of oil is going to be up over $100 a barrel. Because soon you'll be looking at $4 to $5 a gallon. House prices out here have gotten to a point where you're paying $1 million for a house that when it was built was $35,000.
Goodness.
That doesn't reflect that all this huge demand. It reflects inflation. And you could have Wall Street at $55,000, and it would still have less value than it had in 1990.
It's a crazy world. Very, very crazy world. Stephen, I always appreciate talking to you. I always like when you come on. Why don't you tell the people about your websites and your radio shows and things like that?
Oh, I appreciate it, Mark. It's always good to talk with you. Yeah, you know, our website is sepher.net, C-E-P-H-E-R.net. And I have a number of videos that are on what's Sepher Publishing Group is the YouTube channel. You're welcome to subscribe if you like. I spend a lot of time talking about scripture on those channels for the most part. My blogs are about that. In terms of political stuff, I do work with you, of course, and I also speak on Global Spiritual Revolution Radio and Now You See TV and other sources that have, and of course, every now and then on this Radio News Live with Stephen Van Noon. And so we talk about, you know, we talk about prophecy and we talk about end times and we talk about where we are and can we know from prophecy where we are. And so if anybody has any questions, they can contact me at stephen@sepher.net. I'll be happy to answer questions, unless you hit me with too many questions, and I'll blank out.
Okay. Have a good evening, sir. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.